Welcome to the Disability Sport Info Show, the podcast that explores academic knowledge about disability sport. My name is Dr. Chris Brown, and I'm an academic with an expertise in disability sport. Each episode, I focus on a specific topic of disability sport and speak to academic experts to understand the area in more depth. So join me and listen to the Disability Sport Info Show to get an expert view on disability sport. Hello listener, welcome to the Disability Sport Info Show. Today's episode focuses on the sport participation experiences of individuals with an intellectual impairment. To get a better understanding of this area, I caught up with Dr. Erik Svanelöv. Welcome, Erik. Thank you for joining the show. Would you be able to kind of describe some research that's being carried out into the grassroots sport participation experiences of individuals with intellectual impairments, please?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, thanks for having me. It's a great pleasure. I come from Sweden, and the disability sports grassroots level of Sweden is organized on ideological level. There is no payment, mostly.
Voluntary,
great. But there are very few clubs on the grassroots level, so there are very few opportunities for people with intellectual disability to take part in sports. And a lot of the research that is going on now is about increasing participation, evaluating and scrutinizing possibilities to participate in sports, but also what is participation? How do you know if a person is participating in something or just being there, sort of say? So there's a lot of research going on to sort of determine or define what participation is. But there is also a focus on institutional perspective of disability sports. Because most of the people with intellectual disabilities, which I have found and read, are often very dependent on other people's for their opportunities to be part of some kind of sports, some kind of activities, whether it is personal assistance or group homes, or service homes, or, for example, daily activity services. There are often people in a higher position of power that often, in some cases, determines which activities could be appropriate or available. And in some cases, the individuals themselves that can choose between different activities. But there are not so many activities to choose from. For example, if you, like me, love football very much and perhaps go to the gym and work out, those opportunities may not be present. Because if you live in a group home with quite of institutional character, there are schedules of what you're doing, which time you're doing it, and you also have daily activity services where you go to these services or activities, for example, four times a day at a specific time, and there's transport to and from there. There are not so much room for example, football, going to the gym, because you're dependent on other people for the activity. For participation sport, it requires a lot of engagement and effort from the individual itself, but also from the surrounding society and also the social care around the individual.
What kind of sports are often participated in then by individuals with intellectual impairments? As you've mentioned about the need for support network, and how that potentially then creates a barrier for some individuals, or maybe even some sports. So what sports are commonly participated in?
I would say one of the most common sports, I would say, is floorball, football. I think about the English word, athletics. I would say those are the most common sports for people with intellectual disability. When I was conducting my research, I did an article where I interviewed athletes who were part of sport organizations which focused on just people with intellectual disabilities. So I interviewed the athletes and also the leaders, and I found very few sports organizations that just focus on some people with intellectual disabilities. Because mostly there were sports clubs for people with physical disabilities or physical impairments, but not so much for intellectual disability. So the amount of choices that targets intellectual disability is quite few, but I would say floorball and football and athletics are the most common.
Okay, and you mentioned that when you were doing your interviews, doing your research, that when you spoke to sports organizations, it was often probably physical impairments that were kind of being focused on. Why was that the case, and what is it about intellectual impairment that is not appealing or is not part of the focus for these organizations?
When I talk to the leaders about their view of the athletes, I trace back. When I talk to the athletes first, I talk to them about their participation, how they think about sports, about their being an athlete, and they identify themselves as an athlete. They are not disabled athletes, they're athletes, but they said that they were part of disability sports. So they were very aware or had quite a lot of experiences of marginalizations from, say, regular sports, in so to say. But when I talked to the leaders, I said that the athletes, they identify themselves with athletes. It's part of their identity, what they're doing. It makes them feel strong. The leaders didn't acknowledge them as athletes. It was just something that they did, or an activity, or they were having fun. They didn't see them as athletes, but the athletes themselves identify themselves as athletes. I did another research about this, where I've sort of a discourse analysis of how you talk about disability sports. And I found that intellectual disability could be wrapped in cotton, so to say. You try to protect them and not expose them of dangers, so to say. And sports could be one of those ways. Because when I began talking, it was that you were dependent on, for example, staff in the group homes, the activity services, or the people around you to be part of these activities. And when these people around the individual may not like sports, or there are not time for sports, disability sports can be something that could endanger or be potentially harmful in a way. So you sort of wrap in a cotton and try to protect the individual. There were also talks about disability as a sort of inconvenience. It was more work, and it was a sort of inconvenience that disability was constructed or talked about as an inconvenience. It becomes a problem going to and forth. And what if it hurts itself on the disability sport? Who should you call then? And that kind of thing. So you decided to protect, but also it could be viewed as an inconvenience and a problem.
Okay, that's really interesting. So we were talking off air about how, you know, in Sweden, perhaps the approach and perception of disability is often medicalized in nature. And that seems to be shining through from what you're talking about in terms of organizations and leaders' approach to providing opportunities for intellectual impairments. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I would say that. I'm a doctor in social work, and one of the main focuses that I have in social work is that we work with a social perspective. But disability services legislations are based on a sort of a medical diagnosis and a medical perspective, which I, in a way, think is necessary as well. You need to have a sort of categorizations in order to have correct services and availability to certain locations, for example, the activity services or disability sports. But it's what it is that we do with these categorizations that may become a problem. To have the categorization in itself doesn't have to be a problem or pejorative or marginalizing, but what we do with it can be a problem. For example, if we see disability as an inconvenience or a problem when creating opportunities to be part of sport activities, for example. So I would say that there is a medicalized focus, which I think is necessary, but it is how you work with it that can be problematic for the individual.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, from what I'm getting from this conversation is that maybe some organizations aren't necessarily actually speaking with their target group or the individuals they're trying to work with. It is a non-disabled perspective being imposed and kind of being filtered through in terms of attitudes, rather than actually thinking about how can we enable and empower these individuals to participate in sport.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. Well, when I talked to the athletes and both the leaders, I mean, disability sports, as I have found it when I talk to these people, are built up that you cannot be a part of the regular sports here. That is sort of the discourse, or the way you talk about disability. You are deviant, so you cannot be in this place. So we have created another place here, which is a place where you can participate on your terms, so to say, which is a good idea. The idea of the sports organization is to increase participation, self-determination, creating something good. But by doing this binary view of sports, where you have regular sports and disability sports, even if the aim is to provide something good with increased participation, what it does is also to increase segregation between those, and also sort of point out individuals, you cannot be part of here, so you are part of there. So being part of disability sport can be both something positive, but also something negative. Mm-hmm. I mean, it could create a sort of identity of an athlete, you can increase your self-determination and your, I mean, sort of strength in who you are, an expression to be who you want to be. But at the same time, it could be stigmatizing because you're labeled as a disabled athlete or a disabled person. I have an example which connects to the disability sports, how you talk about it and how you segregate it, but it is from Daily Activity Services. And there was a staff walking at the town, and she saw one of the persons that she worked with at Daily Activity Services. And the staff had her working clothes on. She walked towards this person and greeted her and said, "Hi, how are you?" And the person didn't want to say hello to the staff. She just ignored, and then they awkwardly walked away. And when I talked to the individual that had this Daily Activity Services, she said that, "But I didn't want to say hello to her at town because she had a working clothes on. She didn't want to be connected to Daily Activity Services, and that's because that is a categorization as disabled."
Interesting.
So there's a lot of stigma in the categorization. So that's what I said earlier, that the medical perspective can be good, but it what we do with it that is important.
Yes, and it's interesting as well because this is quite a different approach to what we have in the UK. So we've often had the concept of mainstreaming, where it is the non-disabled organization's responsibility to include both non-disabled and disabled people. Theoretically, that's a good approach, but maybe some organizations implement it well and some perhaps not so well. So it's interesting to have the contrast. And of course, with all these things, it's how you implement them and how you utilize it. In itself, they're not necessarily bad or good, but it can be used in negative or positive ways. And it's just interesting to see that different approaches.
Yeah, because I was wondering, in the UK, there is a lot of focus on the social view of disability.
Social model, yeah.
Yeah, and in Sweden, there's a lot of focus on the relational model, where you sort of acknowledge, I mean, the medical and social model. I mean, both have their pros and cons. My view is more towards a social model or a cultural model of disability, but I would say that disability politics in Sweden is built upon the relational model.
Mm. Yeah, and obviously the influence and importance of policy shines through. You know, if it's being set up from the top, then, you know, the actors are going to be implementing the policy that has been set from above. Mm. So, yeah, they're really interesting. So when we look at grassroots sport participation itself, what are the kind of experiences that go on for individuals with intellectual impairments? What are the benefits? What are the challenges or the enablers? Are you able to kind of speak about those kind of points?
One of the big things of being part of this disability sport, which is just wonderful when I went to different sports clubs and talked to them, I mean, it was the love that they expressed of identity construction, being able to express who I want to be and what I want to do. And these are for the individuals that had the opportunities to be part of this disability sport. And these people often had families that were very supportive, or school environments that were very supportive, and also presented different opportunities to be part of this field sports. But the one thing that is an identity that this field sports provides. It is both an individual identity, finding yourself, but also sort of a collective identity. One of the athletes that I interviewed said that, well, in disability sports, everybody can participate no matter what. And that is something that I didn't really find when I talked to the leaders, because that's their focus was on having fun and don't pressure the individuals, where that the individuals themselves, I mean, they competed, they were athletes. So there were so different views of what being an athlete really is. I wrote a Swedish article about this, which is titled "The Two-Edged Sword," where the disability sports is constructed as something that could be positive but also negative. It could be invigorating but also negative. It could strengthen your identity of being an athlete and, as I said, being who you want, but also stigmatizing. You're being labeled as disabled.
So, just from what you're telling me, there's a lot of benefits for the individual. That's clear. You focus quite a lot on the identity construction. However, that idea, that thought, doesn't seem to be pervasive in the minds of those who provide sport opportunities or could provide sport opportunities. So how do we bridge that gap? How do we communicate that actually it's not a risky enterprise? It's not about danger. Let's turn it around and make it more of a positive thing. And actually, look, we can provide benefits to these individuals, and we should be providing sport participation opportunities. How do we bridge that gap, do you think?
I've thought about this a lot and also try to answer one of these questions in my dissertation. And the simple answer is sort of talk about it. Talk about what disability is, talk about what being an athlete is, talk about how you see yourself, and talk about how others see other people. But one of the sort of boring answers is resources also. Yes. Because disability sports, there are some researchers, and I have also found it, that disability sports and sports in general tend to have quite a low status within social care, because you focus on the care aspect of social rather than the social aspects of social care. So one of the main things is to increase the knowledge about what sports can do, the knowledge about benefits that sports can do within social care. I know that just in my department here, that sports is not a big part of social care or social work for that matter either, even though there are so much research about the benefits of sports, whether it is physical, psychological, social benefits. So talk about what sports does, but also it needs to happen on a higher political level in terms of resources for different social care interventions, for example, daily activity services, group homes, personal assistance, because those are often enablers or gateways to different sports activities.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. It's not just going to be a one solution thing. You've got to focus on it quite holistically, you know, broadly. And as you said, you know, there's the social aspects, there's the in terms of the environment, there's also, of course, the organisations, etc. So this question is probably going to be quite hard to answer then. So I apologise in advance. What is the main thing that needs to be done to increase participation for people with intellectual impairments? It's a tricky one.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are a lot of research is going on now that sort of try to distinguish what, I mean, experiences of disability and experiences of being part of different activities. And I think these kind of researches are great because they increase the social awareness in community about what disability is. But also one thing that I focus a lot on is commercials, everyday talk, TV series, how disability is depicted in everyday community, because that also increases the awareness of individuals. I start my dissertation with the word idiot, because that was the way of talking about people in not so long ago. And it has happened so much in the recent years, but it can happen so much more. So sort of increased awareness. And I really don't know how explicitly how to do it, because it needs to happen, as I said earlier, on a higher political level in sort of resources. But what we can do is talk about it.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And what you're talking about actually is kind of just led me to another question, if I can be so bold to ask you another one. How do you think intellectual impairment is seen compared to other impairment groups or other disabilities? And how does that influence the sport participation that is available?
I would say that it has a lower status than other kind of impairments or disabilities.
Why would that be?
One of the reasons is what I said earlier, that you are sort of wrapped in cotton, disability becomes an inconvenience. It can become sort of a problem when you're doing things, because from a normative perspective, you deviate from intellectual or cognitive ideals of how an ideal human should be. And that is sort of a horrific way to look at disability, just seeing that you are sort of a normative deviant. And you focus so much on what the individual cannot do, so you forget to look on what the individual can do. And that is also one way that you could sort of, with your previous question, change perspective on how you look at things. So if you focus rather on what the individual can do than what you cannot do, that is also one of the things that enables or hinders availability to take part in disability sports whether you focus on what the individual can do or what you cannot do.
Is there any kind of positive work that you'd like to highlight in terms of what's going on at the ground level in terms of sport participation opportunities and experiences?
Try to think a lot. My research obviously is really good. My research focuses more of the processes of categorizations and labeling people, which is a big part of sports. I mean, if we look at Special Olympics or those kinds of work, there are categorization in different competitive categories within that. So categorizations, labeling on a grassroots level or social care level is also important for disability sports. So how we are working and talking about the labeling process and categorization process is a big part. But I don't have any, specific names or something like that, but there are a great deal of research that focuses on this kind of labeling categorization processes. If you look at, for example, able-mindedness and those kind of things. I mean, one of those things that really inspired me when I started to look upon disability sports and how it experiences is, able-mindedness, what is an able body and what is an disabled body or something like that.
Okay. All right. Well, I think we've covered quite a lot there. Is there anything you'd like to finally add before we close our discussion for today?
Just be open and talk about different things, but also be reflexive about how you talk about it and why you talk about it. So you have a sort of agenda and idea with your talk. And be open for other people's perspective.
Yes, I think that's really important and a really great point to end. You know, be open-minded. That's the best way to have progress, hopefully. Well, Eric, thank you so much. It's been great chatting with you and great to have this conversation about intellectual impairments and the experiences in Sweden. So thank you so much. And it's great to catch up. And I look forward to seeing you soon.
Yeah, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
That's it. That's all we have time for. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Disability Sport Info Show. Stay tuned for another episode. Until then, goodbye. You've been listening to the Disability Sport Info Show, academic insights into disability sport.